Sarah, recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic and bulimic. And I have a story that's 27 plus years long. So I'm going to try to condense it by mainly looking through the steps for my recovery. So I started out as a compulsive overeater as a child, stole candy, did all kinds of things so I could get my sweets. Definitely sweets were my drug of choice, and then also white substances, rice, bread, potatoes, etc. And then when I went to college, my roommate told me a little bit about I mean, one year we came back and she told me that she had found a way we could eat whatever we wanted and never gain an ounce. And we had been going to a place down the road that served ice cream and for our lunch. And so I thought, well, wow, that's amazing. And I know that now that is the binge purge syndrome. And I kept it, I kept it in my brain for a while before I acted on it. But I did eventually act on it. I used it continually for a long period of time, for tr about 20 years before I was in. Let's see, I actually was in trying to remember. Sorry. What I was trying to say is that I got into something of recovery after being in a step study group. And that was the first place that I actually talked about my bulimia. And somebody in that group was also in OA. And it was a codependency group, not step study. Somebody else was in OA, and she took me to my first meeting. Now, that time I had decided I was there 2 years, and I had decided that I would find out what you all did and then go back out and do it on my own because I was sure that I could do this on my own. And I did. I did 2 years, went back out, and of course, I started binging and purging again. And this time, the first time I was throwing up, this time I used laxatives. And after 7 years, I came back into OA because I had overdosed on the laxatives. So the first year I was in a step study group, they helped me. We started working the steps and they helped me along the way. But we had decided that if anybody lost their abstinence, we would come back and tell the group. So I did. I came back. I told the group that I had lost my abstinence. And they said, Sarah, we want you to keep coming back. And that kind of love had never been given to me, not by my family of origin, not by friends, not by anybody. And that's what kept me coming back. So I would like to talk a little bit about my recovery, I mean, most of it about my recovery, and using the steps as the foil for this. So step one, I realized and I learned that I had to believe of all the steps, all the 12 steps, I had to believe in step one 100%. There was no two ways about it. I had to believe that I was powerless over food, certain foods, and that nothing could help me. I mean, I couldn't help myself, and nothing human could help me. And so I want to read something from the big book real quickly. It says, and this is in the doctor's opinion. It says, it's talking about it's after the first letter, and it's talking about what the Dr. Silkworth is saying. It says, in this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. So what I began thinking about and hearing was that this is a twofold disease. It is a allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And that was, I did get abstinent through the OA literature, but I did not get that particular focus. And when I began to focus on that, the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, I truly could see how crazy I was with food. And then step two, it says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. And it goes on like that. It never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them. And then it goes on to say, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves. So, what is this power greater than myself? The neat thing about that is that in Bill's story, Abby comes to him and he says, in part of what he tells Bill, is that he can find a power greater than himself, and it can be a power that he creates, that he comes up with. So that's what I did in step two. I came up with a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. Now, the first time I had any connection with a power greater than myself, it was a human power. And it was the power of that step study group. And then it became the power of OA people. And ultimately, when I got to reading the big book again, and I read the ABCs in chapter five, it says probably no human power could have relieved our compulsion. And so I began to search for a power greater than me that was spiritual. I call that power God. It's just sort of a nebulous name for higher power. But that was what I came up with. And it's evolved over time a little bit, but pretty much it's a spiritual higher power. So in let's see, step three, let me see. Okay, and step three, it says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things and ourselves which had been blocking us. So step three says, made a decision to turn our will and our power over to our will and our lives over to the power of a over to the ACK. Oh, will and lives over to the let's see, three, over to the care of God as we understood him. So, and it says in what I just read, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it had to be followed at once by something more. And that more is working steps 4 through 12. So step four starts out with, the resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not been only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. So here's where we get the rubber meets the road. We get in contact with those things in ourselves that have kept us spiritually sick. And I do that on my own. I look at the resentments. Why I have them? I mean, it can be a person, it can be a theory, it can be a place. But I look at all those resentments, and then I come up with why I resent them. And then the third column is what it affects of mine. Is it my pocketbook? Is it my I don't know, the other things that are let's see, my ambitions, personal relationships, etc. And so that's column three. And then column four, if I read on another page or two, column four are the character defects that come up for me. So it says, let's see. What do I want to? Okay. It does say, referring to our list again and the three columns, we're going to the fourth column now. It says, putting out of our minds the wrong others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we? Where was I to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set those matters straight. So there's also the fear inventory and the personal relationships inventory that goes along with step four. And that takes us into step five. And I've always loved the promises of step five. So if I have prayed to God, I in step four told myself what my different resentments, fears, and relationships are all about, then I need to tell it to somebody else. And after having told somebody else all this stuff, the promises in step five say, once we have taken this step, step five, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. So I was told that if I didn't feel these things after step five, I must have left something out. And I didn't feel it for about four times. So I kept going back and looking and kept going back and looking. And I found other things that I certainly could add to my four-step inventory. So that's the fifth step. Then in six and seven, and especially in seven, we're talking about humility. And in the OA 12 and 12, it talks about humility in a way that I really understand. And it says on page 52, in OA, we have discovered that humility is simply an awareness of who we really are today and a willingness to become all that we can be. Genuine humility brings an end to the feelings of inadequacy, the self-absorption, and the status-seeking. Humility, as we encounter it in our OA fellowship, places us neither above nor below other people on some imagined ladder of worth. It places us exactly where we belong, on an equal footing with our fellow humans and in harmony with God. So I love that whole idea. I always thought of humility and humiliation as something that was the same. No, they come from the same root, which is, I think, means earth, or but one is a negative connotation, one is definitely positive. And so humility, that's what I began to get as I worked step seven, letting loose, asking God to remove those character defects. Now, the thing about that is that I wanted to make sure that it was in God's time, not mine. I didn't want to force the character defects to be removed. I wanted God to remove them in His own good time. So that's part of the humility. And then step eight and nine, let's see. What do I have here? 76. Okay, so for step eight and nine, they're combined sort of in the big book. It starts out, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. So those two need to go hand in hand, faith and action. Let's look at steps eight and nine. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. That's what we do in step eight, or what I did in step eight. We made it when we took inventory, And there are others maybe that are on that list that weren't on my inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. So I'll tell you one story about my first amends. It was to my ex-husband. We were exes at that point in time. And I knew I couldn't face him and say anything to him. So I wrote him a letter. I read it to my sponsor. And then with some changes, I sent it out. And I didn't expect any return, but he did send a letter back. And in it, he said the most adult thing I'd ever heard from him before. He said, a marriage is a two-way street. we both are involved in whether it's good or it's bad. And I don't know where that letter is. But I remember that as a words of wisdom from somebody who wasn't really wise, who is very addicted. Step 10. So after nine, I've done all the steps to get rid of the debris from the past. 10, 11, and 12 are the steps that I keep using to keep keep all the things swept away daily. And so step 10 is basically using step 4 through 9. And I want to read the promises for step 10. And it really has to do a lot with my spiritual whether I'm spiritually fit or not. But the promises are, let's see what I'm doing. Are on page 84 and 85. But it does say that step 10, we make a personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So we watch out for resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. And when these crop up, we ask God to at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. So the promise at this point is we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And then we have step 11. And I went to a step study that showed me how 11 can apply to my step 10s. And so one of the things that I do is I talk about an ideal. And that's something that comes up in step 4, but can be applied for this situation as well. Step 11, the ideal is, for an example, my family of origin were all extroverts, and I'm an introvert, and everybody would talk all over everybody else, and I couldn't understand what anybody was saying. Well, when I came into OA, in the meetings, people didn't do that, but sometimes some people would talk over me or ask me a question, I'd start to answer it, and they'd turn away or they do something else. And it really, really bothered me. And I would get angry and upset. And so what my ideal is in this situation is if that happens, if somebody talks over, me as I'm trying to say something, I just let them finish. I say at the end of it, I'm so glad that you were able to say what you had to say, but I would appreciate it if you would wait for me to finish what I had to say. And that has been a game changer for me. And then finally, step 12, I do sponsor. I sponsor several people at this point in time. I find sponsoring is something that keeps me in action, keeps me going in this recovery process. And oh my gosh, my sponsees have just been so helpful and so very enlightening for me. So with that, I'm going to pass. I know it looks like my time is about up. I tried to go through it fast and I kind of stumbled over my words. I hope you understood what I said.